All right, welcome back. We're Outside the Box. This is our clinical podcast to drive performance here in the city of Sugar Land. I'm your host, Kevin. Today, with me, I have a guest named Chase Campbell. I'll let him introduce himself here in a minute. But Chase, thanks for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
You are welcome. So today, we're taking another foray outside of our clinical lane, and we're going to start talking about some coaching and cueing and feedback and how we're doing that well, how we can do that better. So that's going to be our topic today. So this is not something exclusively for people who are delivering our training and education, not exclusively for our field training officers. We're going to talk about some things at the personal level that each of us can take as providers to improve how we're helping somebody next to us and how we're helping ourselves.
Absolutely.
So Chase, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and your background and where you're coming from when you speak to these topics?
So I did sports growing up. Everyone in my family is a teacher. So, and I actually, growing up, I was like, I'm not going to be a teacher. I'm done with this. Like, this is too much. Got to college, did the college athletics thing. As I was being coached up, realized like, wow, I do not understand how these guys are coaching. I can do a much better job than them. A little bit ego-driven, but at that point, I was like, is this God telling me something? And then that was a whole different path. But basically, teaching and coaching, passion, something I wanted to do. Learned that in college, my sports background. And then I finished up in the, I transferred a few times, went to Texas State, started getting my teaching degree there, started picking up CrossFit, doing that competitively, and then started coaching that as well. So now I'm a teacher. I've been teaching, this will be my fifth year. And then I've also been coaching CrossFit for 5 years now as well. So,
all right. So what grade level are you?
I'm junior high.
God bless you.
Yeah.
Okay. So coaching at the junior high level.
Precious angels.
Okay. And then coaching athletes as well. Adult athletes.
Yes.
As we are. And I think it's worth mentioning as we move into some discussion, you are not just a athlete yourself. You're a competitive athlete and do pretty darn well at some of these competitions I see at.
I mean, I'm basically Frazier. Not really. Absolutely not.
All right. So, all right. Well, I want to be clear that in college, I played intramural softball.
Good.
1 or 2 years. So I feel like this is the grounds at which I understand everything that you experienced.
Absolutely.
As a college athlete.
Absolutely.
Thanks for not for disagreeing. I appreciate that. Thank you. So, all right. So you've been coached for a while. Mm-hmm. When did you start playing sports? How old were you?
Oh, man. When's T-ball? Is it five, four, or five?
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're young.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm guessing that's probably like 7 years ago, 8 years ago, you started these things. So you've been coached for a while. Let's talk about coaching, teaching. We got to have a conversation, and it was very refreshing to hear you say it as a formally trained educator versus me who just reads some things sometimes, that we like teaching in the style in which we like to learn.
Absolutely.
Our own style.
Mm-hmm.
You have any stories? I know you have experience. Some stories that you had friction as the athlete getting this teaching style that just wasn't yours. And how did that kind of help you grow a little bit and mature as a coach that you were able to change gears? And it's, oh,
yeah,
I should probably pay attention to their learning style.
For sure. So kind of two things. So in high school, I was always sports focused. All my teachers that I had, I felt could care less about the sports part of it, but they're like, this is what you need to learn. But there was no, I guess, relationship. I didn't really feel like they really cared that I knew it. They just wanted to like, just let's get this knowledge through, let's get it through. And I was that typical, if I'm not using this, then like, what am I going to use this for? Mm-hmm. How am I going to use this equation? I am never going to talk about this type of history. Like, why do I need it? And so I just didn't care. And so if you don't care, you're not going to learn it. Like, it doesn't matter. So I learned that's not my style. Like, if I'm not interested, I'm not going to worry about it. If I don't need it, doesn't matter. Get to college. Turns out that what I'm trying to learn for teaching is important to me, and I enjoy going to class. And so I didn't know this at the time, but I'm like, wow, like, I'm about to make dean's list. But it's because it's, I'm nothing special. I'm not that smart, I promise. But it's, I cared about what I was learning. I had a good attitude about it. It was something like, I need to know this. So now I'm going to learn it because, like, this is something I need to know. It's important to me. Fill in the blanks. And so I found out my learning style was like, I need to be interested in what I'm learning about. I need to be comfortable. I need to be, like, excited to learn about it. And that's just for me.
And the value of it.
Yeah.
I need to tell you why it's important for you to know this.
Exactly.
Right. So there's an awful lot of learning styles, and there's formal names to it. You would know more than I would, being, you know, the professional.
Yeah.
We don't need to worry about fancy names to these learning styles.
Yeah.
Just like Chase is saying here, that for you, your style is, I need to know why I need to know it. Where's the interest in it?
Mm-hmm.
Other people, it's going to be, stop telling me about it. Start showing me that.
Yeah.
Your words just don't sink in. Start showing me. Or you're going to have the converse of that. Somebody is going to need the explanation in the words first before some type of demonstration. The moral of this story is not about you.
Right? Exactly.
So, yeah, pay attention to who you're teaching, who you're trying to impart knowledge on. The goal isn't for you to talk. It's for this person to absorb the knowledge. And if we refer back to our last podcast episode, we talked about depth of knowledge and the concept that the person learning is the person doing. Talk, right? So that's how we engage that person. I love it. So where about in this progression did that transition happen that you, as a coach, started to learn, I may not always get to coach or teach in the style I like?
So I actually learned it more with my CrossFit, because with junior high, you have your 6th, 7th, and 8th graders, and they're all relatively the same. Like, they're junior high kids. So once you kind of figure out how to navigate with them, I think it's easier. When I started coaching at my first CrossFit gym, I would have 18-year-olds, people getting ready to go to college, 25-year-olds, and then I have 30-year-olds, and then I have, like, 60-year-olds. All different. Some people are literally just there to get a workout in. They don't need my energy. They don't need any of that. They need, just give me the list of things that we're doing. Don't talk to me too much. Tell me what I need to do and let me go. And I had to learn, be like, okay, so I need to be able to, this person over here, I just need to give him exactly what he needs to know. I don't need to put too much into it. I don't need to put too much detail. Like, here's a lift. Here's a points performance. Let's go. I have this one over here who needs, they need everything out of me. They don't want to be there. So I need to bring the energy. I got to be positive. I need to give them a reason, like, why am I here today? It's Wednesday at 4:30 in the afternoon. Why do I need to be here? So I got to put a little bit more into them, which is fine. Two different styles of learners. And that's when I figured out, like, okay, I can be high energy for this person, but this one, maybe not. I might need to back off a little bit because that's what's going to be best for them. So I would say probably when I started coaching in college is when I figured that out.
Nice. And to draw these parallels, we have quite the span of experience, ages here in our own organization, in our industry, that we have some people that have been with us for less than a year. We hired an awful lot of people in the last year. That's not necessarily their first year in the industry. Some of them, it is towards the early end of their career. We also have people in that same crowd that have been 15 years in our industry. We have people that are coming up on retirement in the next 5 years, just like any profession. We're going to try and keep people around, but we also need to be able to appeal to the spectrum of age, experience, knowledge base, everything else.
For sure.
I think that's a very valuable one with teaching style, because I think without being formally trained in instruction and education, we may not realize that there's a teaching style that we prefer here in our organization or in our industry. I just teach how I know how to teach, and then I just do. But there's different styles.
Absolutely.
To be an effective coach, though, we got to talk about this basis that, like, carried through our entire conversation as we were preparing for this. What do you see as the basis for effective coaching?
First thing I'm going to say always would be building relationships. That is, like, the groundwork for anything. And you see it all the time. There's, like, you'll see people talking about, like, to be an effective coach, you need to do this, this, and this. Well, I know from experience people who know everything about everything. Like, they want 100% know more than me, but they're kind of a dick and they don't really like, I don't know them. Like, I don't feel like I have a relationship with them. So I could really care less what they have to say.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other side, you have some people who might not know as much. There's always room for growth, but they definitely don't have enough. But you know what? They care about my well-being. They want to be there. I can feel like they're genuinely happy to be here, positive. I'm going to get more out of that. I'm going to be willing to hear them out. That way, whenever they come up to me and they're like, hey, let me tell you what I saw here. Or like, hey, how can we make this better? I'm going to be like, you know what? I want to hear what you have to say. This one over here is going to hit me with a book of stuff. Like just all types of knowledge, but it's just here just to like, just flex on me and like boost that ego. I'm probably not even going to want to hear what they have to say.
How much would you liken coaching to sales?
I have a lot of friends in sales, but I would say they're pretty close. Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm pretty sure in sales, like, you're not going to want to buy something from someone that you just absolutely like despise. Mm-hmm. But the more welcome you are to somebody, the more open you are to that. Well, let me hear you out. Let me see what you have to say.
All right.
You know, I'd say it's pretty close. You'd have to ask Marcelo about that one.
Well, funny you mentioned that, right? Foreshadowing to future episodes. We'll meet Marcelo soon.
Mm.
I kind of think of it that way, right? Yeah. Like, teaching is, it's sales. Mm-hmm. It's really great for me to have a warehouse full of my product, but I need you to buy my product to be an effective anything. And we just do it with ideas. We do it with concepts. We do it with technical competencies, right? I come pay you for coaching. Mm-hmm. Come in with coaching philosophies and ideas and the technical competencies that there is this business exchange. But at the end of it, you go to junior high, you got to convince these kids that what you're saying is worth a darn.
Absolutely.
Here's why you need to listen. Right. Your learning style. Here's why you need to listen to it. Here's the value of it. Here's why you should be interested in it. Right. And this is becoming a generational thing. And every time we hit some type of professional development on generational differences, it always comes down to this, that younger generations wants to know why. It's not the worst question in the world.
No.
That there are appropriate times to ask why. Guys, okay? House is burning. Why are we doing that? Not the right time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a fantastic thing to ask why when you don't understand why. For all these reasons, the investment, what you're taking with it, you draw these neural connections, and when there's value cognitively, it just sticks a little bit.
Absolutely.
Do you like being asked why?
So
junior high or adults, right?
Well, honestly, again, the good thing about junior high kids is God love them. They only know so much. So I can like, when they're asking me why, I can hit them with something as easy as like, okay, why do you think so? We'll flip it back on them. Why do you think we need this? Because at the end with junior high, I'm trying to get critical thinking out of them, open-ending questions, because I'm a PE teacher. But I'm not doing just PE. Like, I want you to think. The less I talk, I need you to do all of it. I need you to figure it out for yourself. I'm going to help you work through it. But I'm not ever, especially with junior high, I'm fine asking why. If you want to go down that rabbit hole, we'll talk about a lot of different things. With adults, it's a little bit different because depends on where it's coming from. Are you asking me why because you are trying to challenge me and you like don't want to like, are you trying to like mess me up or do you genuinely want to know why this is?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't ever have a problem with it because I love to talk. So if you're going to ask me a question, I'm like, all right, let's talk about it. But I think everybody should be open to, because you see sometimes people be like, because I said so.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well.
How effective is that?
And I was like, well, that's great. But like now you've just shut off that entire like possibility of them ever hearing you out. So you got to be open to stuff like that, which is something I still continuously work on, but I'm getting better at it.
And I think we all can. I don't like the because I told you so. I don't like to use it. I don't like to perceive it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you threw a nugget in there that's worth repeating, some really good advice when you're asked why. It could be a challenge. It could be.
Mm-hmm.
Why? You know, turn that around. Because remember, again, back to that previous episode, we talked about education. The person talking is the person learning. Why do you think this is? What are some thoughts you have on this one?
Mm-hmm.
Right? If it's somebody that's challenging you, they're just trying to back you into a corner, turn it around, put it on them, and it might start shutting that down pretty quickly. Or if you have the genuine learner they're going to start drawing more of these connections, more critical thinking. They're going to think at that higher level, that more depth of knowledge concept that we talked about, and using this information in a different way.
Absolutely.
Don't be scared to be asked why. I ask you guys why all the time. I love
it. In your mind.
Favorite.
In your mind.
So, so there's relationships, ask why, credibility, being relatable. We haven't even gotten into like how you do it. We're just talking about like kind of prep work.
Oh yeah,
coming in with it, right? So, so don't be a jerk to people.
Yes,
I know, right? We love doing it. We eat our own around here. We love it. That relationship matters, and to even emphasize that we talked about it. That there's some people in the gym that you'll give feedback, and the response is, "Hey, I thought you wanted to be good. Why'd you do that?" And there's some people that will shut them down.
Absolutely.
Some people it needs to be, "Hey, I don't think you're doing it the way you think you're doing it. Here's some cues." We'll talk about cues and feedback.
Mm-hmm.
But individualistic feedback is important based on that relationship.
Absolutely.
The same place. We're coming from an I love you place.
Yes.
Right? I've told you guys that. I pay attention to you because it's my love language. It's how I show you I care. That's why I'm in your business.
Which one's your love language?
All five.
All five.
That's a fun other story, yes. Yes, my wife is acts of service. I'm all the rest.
Let's go.
I need to be validated. Thanks. All right. So let's approach some technical performance, right? You coach in the gym. There is some things that are far more technical than others in these movements. Mm-hmm. Let's get towards the more technical end that require a lot more attention. Where we can talk about cleans, we can talk about snatches. For those who aren't familiar with those kinds of lifts, we're talking about taking a barbell from the ground. You do a whole lot of things in sequence, and it ends up over your head, and there's a snatch.
Yep.
Very tactical. You'd be very impressed with the weight that I snatch.
Absolutely.
If you like really light weights, you'd be really impressed with it. So let's talk about approaching something as technical as that, because we have a lot of technical procedures in our field. Is it really a reasonable expectation for success that somebody comes in cold with zero knowledge, that the first time you see them to introduce this lift, they have no knowledge of anything? Or should they come in with some type of knowledge of, you know?
If I have it my way, I want you to walk into the gym knowing nothing about anything. I don't need you to know anything. It should be a clean slate, because what we're going to do is we're going to go from the ground up. And I believe our coaching staff does a great job of, we are going to teach you the points of performance, the most important things, and we're going to build those good habits from the get-go to avoid injury, and then we're just going to work from the top. I see a lot of people who come in and they'll say, "Hey, I have a lifting background. What's your lifting background?" "My high school coach showed me how to do cleans." "Okay, so do you do cleans the right way, or do you do them I'm going to pick the bar up, I'm going to slam my feet, and I have absolutely zero technique in my elbows." And so I'd rather you just come in and know nothing. That way we can focus on the little things, and it's a process. But that way we're developing good habits. You're going to learn the right things, learn what's important, learn what not to do, and then we'll be on our way from there. But moral of the story, you do not have to know anything. I'd actually prefer it that way.
Ideal. So ideal to start fresh.
Yes.
Oftentimes, we don't get the ideal.
No.
We hire certified people.
Mm-hmm.
Our ideal candidate from the training and resource end comes in with a whole package of certifications that we want them to have.
Mm-hmm.
But more times than not, they have a couple. We need to send them out and get some more. But we really don't get as much opportunity, as I'm sure you would like, of clean slates, that we hire paramedics that have been paramedics somewhere else. Them coming in with some experience, because we don't have to teach them from the ground up.
For sure.
But then we get bad habits. We get other methods and techniques in
there. You have my way of doing things.
Yes. Yes. Can we undo bad habits?
Absolutely.
Oh, thank God. Okay.
You can.
Yes, we can.
But some people aren't going to like the answer to it.
Okay.
Do that.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
Right? But here we are. So, fortunately, people come pay you for your coaching.
Exactly.
Which means they're always receptive to feedback.
Exactly. And they want
to
hear it.
So how do you approach this? Let's talk about taking something with so many pieces, so technical, requires so much attention to go from the ground to overhead. How do you break this up? How do you prioritize what gets attention?
So first thing I'm going to do is, like I've said, let's say we're talking about the clean and jerk, all right? I'm going to put you in a position where you're not going to hurt yourself. Safety is number one. Okay. Because I totally understand. I'm aware we're not going to get this right. It's going to take a long time to get this right. So what we're going to do is we're going to work little by little, focus on the key points of performance that I mentioned, main things I'm looking for, all right? So I need your arms straight. I need a strong core. I need a neutral spine. I need all these things. I need your heels flat. These are all things that when we're going through the lift, I'm looking for these, making sure that you're hitting most of these.
And these are the points of performance we've already discussed before I even approach the bar.
Yes. And like here, so I'll take you through how we're going to do a class. So I'm getting in there. I'm doing our briefing at the whiteboard. I'm saying, all right, we're doing clean and jerk today. Here's what I'm looking for in the clean and jerk. And I'm going to demonstrate what a clean and jerk looks like. And I'm going to talk about the points of performance. Like we said, heels flat, chest up, elbows up, tight core. I'm sure I'm missing a few, but they're going to know going into it, oh, this is what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So our goal, whenever we go over this, is we're going to try and hit as many of those as we can. All right. And then my job as a coach is to go around and be like, hey, let's focus on this one. Let's get this one. Oh, I see what you're doing there, but that could be a safety hazard. So let's backtrack a little bit because it's going to go back to, I want you to do as much as you can without possibly harming yourself.
So we start out with danger gets attention first.
Yes.
And I think we can appreciate that it's not necessarily so much danger to us as providers a lot of the time, but we're doing things to people, mm-hmm. to human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And we could cause some pretty substantial harm. So if we're taking a procedure, we focus on these aspects that could be dangerous to the patient or even dangerous to us,
mm-hmm.
protect on those. Once safety's in line, safety's good. I'm not rounding my back. It's nice and neutral. I'm good. Where would you just start randomly picking performance points after that? Or is there some better direction that you go in?
So the way you want to look at it as I'm looking, I see that your movement pattern's well. Now I'm going to chip away at what is most important. Okay. So I'm seeing on your pull, your pull's great. You're keeping your arms straight, but you're really bending your back, all right? So whenever I tell you to get a more neutral spine, you might bend your arms a little bit, but I'm more focused on your back. I don't want your back to bend, all right? Because you mess up your back, like you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So our point is today is like, I want your hips and shoulders to rise at the same time. That is what I'm focusing on. I know full well by me putting a lot of attention on this, other things, you might lean forward on your toes. You might come off your heels a little bit. I'm okay with that. I want to focus on the back. All right, so we're going to hammer that. And I see, okay, back's great. Now, let's tighten up the arms. Let's keep our arms straight. Let's get that full extension with the arms.
So you're good taking a single point of performance and cueing that point if that's what needs the attention, if it's that important to the move, or especially if it's the safety stuff.
Absolutely.
We're fine to take a single cue.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to be in sequence.
No.
So we can have...
This is all opinion, by the way. Some people might hear this and be like, that's ridiculous.
Fair.
But
valid. Yeah, very valid.
This is how I like to do it.
I personally agree that just because something is in line sequentially doesn't mean it necessarily gets attention before another point.
Yes.
I think we can agree that there are some crucial points that need to be at least moderately proficient before proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
A lift, a procedure, any of these things. I am not going to have you start poking to start IVs if you don't know what to do once it's in the vein.
Exactly.
That's not the time we're going to learn it. We're
exactly.
We're going to cover some of these back end
things. Yes.
Right. I think it's, I kind of make it in my mind anyway, like a broad sweep,
mm-hmm.
some bigger ones, and then we come back and start fine tuning the style points.
Yeah.
Right. That here's better ways to grip. Here's whatever it may be. Here's better ways to hold down your catheter while you're connecting your tubing, whatever it may be.
There you go.
So we take these cues. We can take one. We can take two, three. We had talked about that. This is a very individual thing on how much gets attention at a time.
Yes.
And how many for you, and not even here's your locked in number, but if somebody's coming in to coach you on your favorite lift, your snatch, how many different performance pieces do you feel comfortable getting cued that you feel like you can pay attention to? Not even comfort. How many do you think you can pay attention to for you, somebody competitive level athlete going at this?
I can tell you for me, if I'm doing, let's say I'm doing a very heavy snatch, I need one, maybe two, but I'd rather have one. I need one focus cue. Hey, on your way up, I need you to explode and I need you to stay long in your pull. Long pull. That is all I'm focusing on. Mm-hmm. All right. Because we're gonna assume that you have all the other points of performance. Like those are relatively good enough because we're obviously going for a heavier lift. So we're to that point now where like, I know you know most of it, but I need you to really dial in on this one because this is going to affect a lot of other things. There's probably a lot of other things I could work on as well, but this, from what my coach is seeing, this is what we need to focus on. So for this lift, I want you to do this. Focus on this. All right. Long pull.
And this is happening before the lift starts.
This is before the lift.
And then as you're lifting, I've already heard the cue. I know the cue's good. What's the cue going to be? What am I going to say to you as your lift is already going to focus on that point of performance?
So with snatch, it's actually going to be such a quick lift that you probably won't have time to say anything. But right as I'm setting up, you'll be like, let's have a long pull right here. Say that right before, go.
Right. So,
right.
So some attributes to this cue is here's the big wordy chunk where you talked about it, but now you have your hands on the barbell, like the small, actionable,
yes,
digestible piece.
Yes.
How much brain work are you putting into this snatch? You as the athlete.
As the athlete,
you do it.
I'm already focusing on so many different things that now, because I'm already thinking to myself, got to keep that chest up. Got to keep my arms straight. I got to drive through my heels. I need to make sure to engage all of my hamstrings, all of my core, my hips and shoulders all need to rise. This is all going through my head.
You already got the checklist.
Yes.
You're already coaching yourself this check.
Yes.
So how beneficial is it as you're doing this? You're approaching the bar. You're ready to pull. You take that slack out of the bar. And I'm like, you know what, Chase? Hey, I think you could do a little bit better job exploding if you get this timing a little bit better here. Like, what? Like, does that just throw off the whole game? Or is it in general? Generally speaking,
yeah.
You'll give that kind of feedback at that moment of performance. Does it even sink in? Or did we just throw somebody completely off the mark entirely?
So me, I don't know if this is a good trait, but I am the type of athlete where I need one person who I trust and I'm comfortable with, and I don't need you just telling me stuff. If you're going to coach me, that's great. I want it. But you need to coach me on something that I need to know. Like, let's, because as I'm focusing, I don't need someone like, come on, man, let's really focus on those heels. Because I'm the type I'll be like, my heels are on the ground. I don't need to hear that right now. Mm. Like, relax. Like, I got it. But if you're telling me, hey, strong pull, keep those arms long. I'm like, okay, that's good. That's all the information I need already into what I'm doing. Because, like, it's a, you can ask any, like, I'm not saying I'm like an Olympic weightlifter, but like when you're set in right there, like you're focused on these things and you have so many different things being thrown at you, you're like, okay, like I'm not even listening to you. That's great, but I'm not hearing it. So I would say not the best, but if somebody is going to do it, it needs to be someone that you're comfortable with, which goes back to relationships. Like, this person's telling me this because this is what I need to know right now.
So we need to economize all of it.
Yeah.
Language, cognitive demand, right? And we can get into all of Dave Grossman's performance psychology stuff about how heart rate escalates, the stress dumps, and our cognitive abilities just start to diminish.
Mm.
We're already there. We hit that zone at about 100 beats a minute.
Yeah.
100 to 120. We start losing fine motor skills and cognitive function. And now I'm going to give you a dissertation on what I need you to improve, like, right? So whether it's lifting in this cognitive load, we're dealing with sick people in front of you that you're already trying to compute and differentiate, presenting conditions, develop a treatment plan, and then perform technically on top of it. Like, don't go adding in stress when you don't need stress. We're already stressed, right?
Exactly.
So these small, bite-sized, actual things, I really like that. If you're already doing it, like, I don't need you to tell me I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's a good one.
Yes.
And this is in the time of performance. I think it's valuable to note after or before, hey, your heels solid. They're good. We don't need to talk about it anymore.
Absolutely.
We've addressed it, proficient, got it. Right. It's worth noting, not at the time of execution.
No. Yeah.
Feel good about that kind of
comment? Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So we talked about like what we do with those cues. We talked about how to prioritize some of those cues. We talked a little bit about how many cues is too many cues, and really, like, pay attention to who you're teaching is what it is. There's no set number of, I listened to the podcast that said you should be able to take 4 cues at a time, and you are struggling with 3. Don't be a jerk, right? Back to relationships.
Yep.
Depending on the complexity of it, and let's take this for a minute. We do procedures that hurt people. There's going to be things that cause some physical damage for a greater physical benefit, right? Mm-hmm. We're stabbing people in veins with IVs, like, you know, injections. Here we are thousands and thousands of years into medicine, and we still have shots.
Yep.
It is what it is, okay? There's going to be some things, and that brings stress to us as providers because you're harming a human being who's counting on you to help them, right? So this is, right? So appreciate that. As you're teaching somebody to do this, as we're putting a laryngoscope down somebody's throat, let's appreciate that, like, this might be unnerving for me as a provider to do. Have some of that compassion. So maybe when we start packaging cues, it's not here's 7 or 8 cues on top of a stressful procedure. What the hell's wrong with you? You suck at this.
Yeah.
Right. Let's back it up. Let's be reasonable about stuff.
I like it.
So pay attention to the person that you're teaching, that you're coaching, on how many cues or too many cues.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think is worth noting, you talk about, here's the one cue I'm going to get, this long pull. You know, any cue, take whatever cue it is. It sounds like this doesn't happen one time. You're not just, hey, long pull. Okay, great. Next.
Yeah.
What are we on to next? How many times you go work, do technical work on a snatch?
Mm-hmm.
Because you do, because you love it. You're always there doing it, right? How many reps are you throwing in focusing on one single thing before you feel good with that pull?
So I can't even give a set number because the amount of reps that it's going to take to, like, for it to be second nature, to be comfortable with it, is like well over like 100. Like, and like, that's a huge number of people are like, that's a bit much. But really, like, repetitions is everything. Like, when we're warming up, if we're in class, going to do some muscle snatches, do a few of those. That's 10 right there. All right, now I'm going to do some practicing with my high pulls. All right, this is all with an empty bar. We're just warming up. All right, mm-hmm. So we fit like 30 reps maybe. Now we're adding weight, and now we're going over, let's do some power snatches. All right, let's do some hang power snatches. All right, let's focus on keeping the bar close. So now I'm just going to do some drills of just keeping the bar close to doing more high pulls. Already done high pulls, but now I'm going to do more. And I'm going to get beyond comfortable with my pull and keeping that bar close to my body. I'm going to keep doing that. And just because we snatched on Monday, I'm probably going to, if I'm trying to get better at it, Wednesday or Thursday, I'm going to do some pull work. I'm going to do some type of just PVC pipe work. I'm going to be doing all those things. But, like, you will never be able to say, like, I've done enough reps with this. I'm good. I don't need this anymore. Like, you can always do more.
Not one rep.
Absolutely.
Not nailing it one time.
Absolutely not.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and take, I've used a simple procedure. And let's kind of compare it to competitive weightlifting. That if you were going to go compete lifting snatch, how many chances for score do you typically get?
I think it's 3, right?
Something like three attempts, and there's some, right? So 3 performance attempts. And you're saying that if you go into these 3 attempts, you've probably had close to 100-ish repetitions of hopefully. This movement some type.
Yeah, hopefully.
For every IV you start on a patient, how many IVs have you practiced starting? Right? How about that? Think about this practice to performance ratio. Each time we perform something on a patient, that's our performance time. That's the competition. That's the one for score. And when's the last time you did it? And did you even practice it since the last time? I got a big thing I like pushing that we need to minimize the amount of time since the last time you did something, but it shouldn't be patience. Like, patient to patient, like, we should be practicing these technical skills, this competency in between.
Exactly.
There should be a good number of practice repetitions for every performance. Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing with that is, I mean, weightlifting is obviously not the same as saving a life, but whenever you're doing those in practice, yes, it's like taking forever. Like, oh, I've done this before. What is this? Like, this is the same thing. But when you get into that performance type moment. Oh, well, you've done it 1,000 times. Why are you nervous right now? Mm. Have you not done it enough? Because like you said, it's 3 lifts. You tell me I'm going to go in the gym tomorrow and I'm going to hit 3 snatches. I can tell you right now the numbers I'm going to do. And I'm like, got it. If you put me on a platform and a competition, I've done them before. I can tell you for a fact, I know I can do those lifts. But now there's a performance. Now it's important. Now there's a little bit riding on the line. But if I can sit back and be like, I've done this so many times, I know for a fact I can hit this. I've hit this when I felt like this, this, this. You have all these different things. So like now it's not just, well, if you've done it so much, then why are you so nervous right now? And like whenever we were talking earlier, I was thinking about that. I was like, if I was in a situation where I'm trying to save this person's life, I want to feel like I know this like the back of my hand. Like I will not mess this up. If something goes wrong, it won't be because of this, because I have put in the work to do this. That's how I like to think of it.
And I mean, even as a side note, you go to a competition well-prepared, well-practiced. How much fun is that?
Oh, it's the best.
Right?
Yeah.
Maybe not that we're out, like having a gleeful time as people are dying, but you go into this kind of, with that level of confidence to be able to have a smile on your face. And I mean, this, it changes brain chemistry.
Yes.
It's stress inoculation to have these practices, right? It is a legitimate thing that we ward off those diminishing cognitive functions and capacities and maintain some fine motor skills. We're not jittery and shaky trying to make things happen, right? Because we've been there, we've done it. We've mentally rehearsed, even physically rehearsed.
Yes.
And then you can have the confidence, you can have the composure.
Yes.
And you're composed enough to smile about it.
That's it.
I mean, having that kind of demeanor, that decorum, and honestly, that's what the public is going to expect of us. Mm-hmm. And that's a reasonable expectation, that we don't compound the crisis.
Yep.
We improve it. So we do that through the composure, the demeanor, the technical aptitude we have. So yeah, practicing all day. So let's talk about a concept in cueing and in feedback that you brought up yesterday. It's the first time I've heard it, and it just like blew my mind. I'm going to let you say it. You talked about this. You learned from your level 2 coaching.
Yes.
On giving cues. What assignment did they give you in class that you had to fulfill?
So you see people when they're trying to give a cue, they'll say, okay, so I need you to get your elbows up, but don't do this or don't do this. And the coach stopped. He's like, don't say don't. And right there, he's showing us like, that's a cue. Don't say don't. Don't overthink it. And you're like, okay, don't say don't. Cool. I need you to, and then it flips everything, because now you're like, okay, I'm going strictly positive. I want you to show me what you can do. I'm not going to focus on the negative. We don't need to worry about that. Let's build on this, like, let's do this, do this, do this. Don't tell me what I don't need to do. I don't need to know that. Like, what do I need to do? Yeah. Do this for me.
And I love it, because the human brain doesn't work in the negative.
Yeah.
This isn't like some fluffy, toxic positivity, let's all feel good. No, this is legitimate psychology, that the brain doesn't work in the negative. Just like the old classic example of, hey, don't think of a pink elephant.
Great.
That's the only instruction you get. You're like, right? But if it's think of the giraffe, then great. I think of the giraffe. Same kind of do this thing, do that thing.
Yep.
Because if I say, Chase, don't punch me in the face. Well, that leaves an open opportunity for kicking in the face, elbowing in the face, throwing books at, like,
why do I need to punch him in the face?
Right? So please don't. Thanks. Pretty. Okay. But we don't work in the negative. It just doesn't work. The human brain doesn't process negative. And if all we're doing is don't that, don't that, don't that, it causes frustration. It causes angst. It's, what do you want from me if not all of these things?
Mm-hmm.
Be a better coach, a better instructor, a better mentor, and say, I want this. This is what I want to see.
Yes.
And I think it's worth mentioning that it came up in our conversation that you have enough people that you've coached that you give them that same kind of feedback, you give them the same kind of cues, and you don't get the effective response. It's worth mentioning, you're doing this. You may think this is, I'm saying this, you think you're doing it, but do you realize this is it? And like we talked about right before we started, film it.
Yes.
Film it. Oh. Right? I love game film, right? Put it on film. So, Rach,
nowhere to hide with that.
And if any of you have taught a class and have not filmed yourself teaching a class, just give yourself a little bit of grace when you watch that video.
Do it.
Okay? So let's talk about attitude, though, towards feedback.
Okay.
With junior high kids. These kids know it all, man. I got a couple.
They really do.
They know it all. How are you approaching kind of arrogant attitudes, know-it-all attitudes?
So this is actually why I love junior high, is because although I'm 27, I am a bit of a jackwagon, and I joke around all the time. I love more than anybody. I'd be like, oh, we're trying to see who's the best. I can show you right now. So I love junior high because I myself am basically a junior high kid. So with junior high, it's very easy. If they're questioning, you're like, coach, like I do this or blank, blank, blank. I'm like, okay, so you say you do this. It's very easy for me to just go over to them because the way they function is they're very ego driven. So they have this weight on the bar. I'm like, listen, I need you to squat lower so you can build up your hamstrings. All right. Because right now I can curl your weight that you're trying to squat. And you say you're so strong, but I can curl your weight. Take the bar off, hit a few sets and throw it back on there and be like, do you see why it's important that you build up your hamstrings? Because right now you have no leg muscles. But like I can talk with them because I've obviously built that relationship. I'm not saying don't go in and do that. My kids know me enough to know like Coach Campbell's not going to make us do something that we don't need to do. There's a reason. So I would say with junior high, it's more fun, but yes, you need to be ready because there's a lot of outside forces. So like they have a whole bunch of different thoughts. So it's good to like ground them, talk them through. This is why we're doing this. It's very important.
All right. So back to this relationship.
Yes.
Back to the value of why this is worth your time and your energy.
Yes.
And since we were talking about Jocko earlier, second book, I believe chapter 7 or 8, When to Mentor, When to Fire. Are there times that you can recognize that you've hit the threshold? You have coached the best you know how to coach, and it is ineffective for this individual. Have there ever been a time that you've recognized that?
So, yes, but it's come down to when that happens, I have to first look back and be like, am I saying and doing absolutely everything I can? Because I'm going to take ownership of it first. Like if they're not squatting properly, that's on me to figure that out. And if I don't know why they're not squatting, I need to figure that out. All right. So I'll do some self-assessment and be like, okay, well, I probably need to tell them to widen their stance or work on this, or like, let's work on hip mobility. So I'm always going to lean more on the side of, yes, it might take a long time. There have been definitely days where I'm in class, I'm like, I've told this dude to squat lower. I've done this. I put a target there, told him to widen his stance. Like some people just are very set in their ways. And so that's what goes back to the relationship part of it. You got to build that relationship and be like, I want the best for you. This is what we're trying to do. And like, here's the thing. The hard part with that is you'll see people who it doesn't seem like they're getting it, but they might be getting an inch lower than they did the other day. So what we need to do is be like, hey, man, that's a little bit lower than it was yesterday. That's great. We're not where we want to be, but that's better. We're working upward. Like, we're getting there. Because that's the biggest thing is you see some people, they just want to be perfect and get it from the get-go. And then it's very easy to get discouraged. Mm-hmm. So, like, those little wins and be like, we're not there yet. Because I'm not saying don't just be like, all right, I guess that's good enough. Let's move on. Like, no. We still need to work on this, but I like where we're at. Let's keep building on that.
So technical proficiency takes time.
Absolutely.
Like an hour, 90 minutes?
An hour for the day in the class until next time.
So it's come up a couple of times, and I think it's worth mentioning this is a continual process. Forever learning, forever developing. As soon as you stop paying attention to it and you pay attention to something else, you'll have skill degradation over here and you won't have the proficiency you did because you didn't do it for 2 weeks. That's how it goes.
Do you know the brain operates on a use it or lose it type thing?
So it's true that if you don't use it.
I'm a CDL holder, which means I can drive a school bus. For that test, we have to look up under the hood and I have to point out all these different things. when I was learning it, for the 3 months that I learned it, I could tell you every part of that bus, because on the test, you have to show the instructor that. So I was hammering it. Like, I can tell you blank, 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 blank. I know all of it. I cannot tell you a single thing on where to point at, too, because I have not, when I passed that test,
it's the last time you looked at it.
That was it. I have not used any of that information. I'm sure if I looked back into it, it'd start clicking like, oh, yeah, I remember learning this. Right now, if you told me, draw up, tell me what you learned, I'd be like, I can give you 50%, maybe. So, absolutely, you have to keep hammering it.
Keep it going. I love it. I want to hear some comments about how you regard feedback, because sounds like having been an athlete for decades, you may have been criticized by those making you better just a little bit.
No.
Tell us your attitude towards feedback and some advice that you might have for others who may receive feedback.
So I'm one of those weirdos that I enjoy you telling me everything that I did wrong and that I need to improve, mainly because as a teacher, actually as a husband, as a father, like all these things, like once you figure out that when you're giving me feedback, it's going to help me be better at what I care about. Because I care about it. I want to be better at it. So why would I be upset with you for telling me, hey, here's a way that you can be better and more efficient at this? And so a CrossFit athlete, for example, I have goals of getting to a semifinal, which means I have to hammer tiny details, stuff that I'm good at, I can be better at, stuff that I'm not as good as I need to. I need my coach to be like, hey, you're great. You're better than most people. But for where we're trying to get, you are not good enough. So you need to hammer reps with these. And once you can get out of your head, like, they're not attacking me. They're not saying that, like, I'm a bad person. They're saying, you need to get better at this. This is clearly something you can work on. So having that, like, growth mindset of, like, I'm going to go this way. I'm going upward. I'm going to keep learning. There is always something you get better at.
Mm-hmm.
Like, absolutely. So I'm very for it. However, the delivery and how all that is a big part to do with it.
Okay.
So, perfect example, our quarterfinals for CrossFit finished up. I did okay. Like, for where I was trying to go this season, like, I did right where I was expecting to be. My coach comes over to me and says, hey, so here's the deal. You look great. Body's awesome. For a normal population, this is good. For competitive CrossFit, you probably need to drop, like, 10 pounds. And so, for a second, I was like, dang, that's tough to hear, but I get why you're telling me this. And by me being lighter, it will help with gymnastics. It's going to help with endurance. So I'm like, okay. And so started doing that. And I have seen a clear difference in my performance from losing that weight. But you have to be open to hearing that. Some people are going to be like, I don't need to lose weight. Like, I'm happy the way I am. That's great. You won't get any better at this, though. Moral of the story, feedback is good. I enjoy feedback. I enjoy giving feedback. It is great.
Lean into it.
Less. Yes, absolutely.
And for us normal people, less feedback may be tough sometimes. Right? Might be unpleasant, but you're right. I think it's being that goal focused.
Yes.
Am I intending to be happy with where I am right now? Then I don't want your feedback, because that's against my goals.
No.
But if I legitimately want to improve and get better, which I'm going to push you to continue to get better, because we don't want to stagnate. Medicine just moves too fast versus stagnate. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes you just need to take the breath, step back from it, and kind of look at it. You're right. It's not a personal attack. If you're the one giving feedback as a personal attack, you're a jerk. We're going to have a different conversation.
Absolutely.
Not what that's about. But you find those people that are willing to give you that feedback. That's how you get better. That you're going to tell me things that are uncomfortable, that I'm going to have to dig in on, I'm going to have to improve on. I would love to hear everything's great and I'm fantastic. Thanks, Chase.
For sure.
Not the case. Right, not the case.
No.
That's not how growth happens. So might be uncomfortable. Lean into the feedback. Take it. Take it from the right places also. Grain of salt on where you take your feedback. Little side note. Okay. So let's bring it on home.
What kind of comments do you want to close with? What kind of advice might you want to give? What are some points that we've already talked about you may want to reemphasize?
I would say teaching wise, I can't hammer this enough, is like building relationships, getting people to trust you, understand that you want the best for them. That is going to be the biggest game changer. Building that relationship, letting people know that I'm doing this because I want the best for you. Because the minute I know that you care about me and that you want me to succeed, I'm going to literally, I want to hear everything they have to say, good, bad, whatever. That's what I'm here for. Because like you said, you have people who go in and they don't necessarily like it. Like, well, if you don't like it, then why are you here? You clearly want to get better. So let's get better.
I think sometimes people want to be good.
Yes.
They don't necessarily want to get better.
Yeah.
They want to be good.
Yes.
And I think that's the challenge. When I get feedback, it's no, I want to be good. Feedback, no. No, I want just to be good.
Yeah.
We don't get to the end point without the process. You don't get that outcome.
Absolutely.
This relationship building, I think it's very worth mentioning some things to damage this relationship. Ridicule and finding opportunities to humiliate the person for not knowing or not performing well.
Mm.
I feel like that would really cash in your credibility.
Absolutely.
Lying to this person, just blowing smoke at him, BSing. We talked a little bit about it, of lying to somebody versus I just don't know that. I feel like saying I don't know, I got to find some information.
Mm-hmm.
It just adds more and more to your credibility, shows that you're not going to go throwing garbage out there.
Yes.
Right? And the relationship stuff, I think, is big. I think it's the same kind of thing. We talk about it with patients, with establishing rapport, with challenging patients, and they relate better to me, so I'll be the one that works closely with this patient to get some things done. It's the same thing in teaching, the same thing in leading, all the relationship stuff. It's all the interpersonal abilities to interact with another human being and just be relatable, be empathetic,
mm-hmm.
understanding.
Absolutely.
I think that's a phenomenal point to make, and that's going to lead us, let's see, we're going to foreshadow into another episode that we alluded to earlier. We're going to talk about having those interpersonal skills in some emotionally charged settings.
Mm.
But Chase, I appreciate you being here. Chase Campbell, no relation to Wayne Campbell, but still noteworthy, valuable guest. Really appreciate your time today. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Happy to be here. It was good.
All right. Well, there you have it, and we'll catch you next time.